Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This literally kind of happened to me when I auditioned for the second season of The Comeback.
Stop. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? This week's episode has been decades in the making. John Early himself, the comedian that I've known since I was 19 years old, is here to set the record gay. Now, I not only ask him about some of my favorite videos of his, like Paris, I also get backstory on the short film Rachel, also with Kate Berlant, and we talk about his new movie, Stress Positions. But before the ep, I have to say that all the messages I got about the Gay Ass Live Show lineup made me even more sopping wet with excitement for that show. If you saw online, it's going to be Dwayne Perkins, Margaret Cho, and Gus Kenworthy are on the panel competing for their character actress of choice to win Cock, champion of character actress Knowledge. And then our stand-up girlina is Pat Regan of Seek Treatment fame. And we'll have amazing drag and himbo acts to be announced soon. The tickets are close to sold out, so if you are in LA and you want to go, the show is 2 weeks away, and stay tuned, New Yorkers, for our next Gay Ass Live Show announcement that will be coming soon. If you enjoy That's a Gay Ass Podcast, open up that app right now and rate 5 stars, if only to drown out the recent 1-star review that is, quote, obsessed with how bad this podcast is. I know it's not bad, but let's let the world know. Click 5 stars and either write your favorite character actress or just what you love about the pod. But we're going to get into this episode with John Bowman Early. Listen to us discuss our relationship to steam room sex, the women of SNL, John's Britney Spears impression on Conan, and the time that, yes, John was called in to audition for the Gay Bible, The Comeback. John Early is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Tea in hand. John, tell the girls, what flavor of tea are you drinking?
It is lemon. Wait, I think it's lemon spearmint. Mm. And the darkest part of it is that it's Prolon tea. Do you know what that is?
It sounds like it's gonna make you poop.
It actually isn't. It's a cleanse. It's a fast.
Oh, so in the opposite of pooping, you're not eating, but you are peeing everything out of your form
constantly. Yeah. I don't even know why I brought it up, because I can't explain it, because I'm obviously so not interested in the science of it. Sure. I'm just trying to vainly, you know.
Are you preparing for a shoot? Are we preparing for a beach? Are we preparing for a bathhouse?
I wish any of that were true, actually. I'm just going to New York to do press the stuff for this movie, Stress Positions, released by Neon, April 19th in New York, April 26th in LA, executive produced by starring me. It's a lot of pictures, and none of us really have any control over our image, of course, but I would say less control than the average person. Like, I know how to be filmed. Uh-huh. I do know how to be photographed.
Interesting. Well, because I was gonna say that in this, you are not fishing and I'm supplying this on my own accord, but I always marvel at how gorgeous you look. And
oh my god, Eric,
I really mean, like, you, the fact that you say that, and that's why I'm so excited to have you on this gay ass pod, is because so many people put any people, but especially John B. Early, on a pedestal, and to hear that you have the photography anxiety of it all, like, that just humanizes you to a point that I think we all need to learn that stars are just like us.
Oh my god. Well, I have to just say something that's in my head, which is that, just to immediately take it off me, did I just see a ring on your left hand?
John, there's a lot.
Is that a wedding band or is that an engagement ring?
Wedding, babe. I've been married for more than a day and less than 10 years. I've been married for 4.5 years. I've been with my husband for almost 11.
Eric.
John.
I did not know this.
John, we've got... So can we just unpack how long we've known each other and why this is such a beautiful reunion?
Yes.
We met in uni. And we were both in the same program, and you were 2 years above me, and I truly idolized your class. Just like, I just remember being an 18-year-old fresh off of the train from Missouri, and your class, the oldest level class at the Atlantic Acting School, you guys were just so... I still think this. You as a class and you as a group were like so, like, not only funny, but also made me feel special that you actually talked to me at all. And I still, in a way, see you in this lens of someone who I still look up to, still think is absolutely gorgeous. And anyways, to get into the actual reality of the truth of it all, you were... the star of the play Psycho Beach Party in the year of 2010. And I was a mere, I don't know, going into my junior year, sophomore year. And yeah. This was the summertime. And it was like an off Broadway play. And you were the star of the Charles Bush Miracle at a Psycho Beach Party.
I can't believe. And you were in it, though.
I was.
Who did you play?
I was Provolone, one of the, like, me and Brian McSween and I were, like, you know, the closet case lovers, and
yes, of course.
And you were, I just remember in rehearsal watching you go absolutely AWFF, as the kids say, mm-hmm. and just, like, I think from there, in my book, the rest is herstory. I'm sure your herstory is different, but that was literally... the beginning of me knowing you.
Well, that was also, like, to me, that is literally the most fun I've ever had, was that play. Mm-hmm. Obviously, or maybe not obviously, I was a gigantic Charles Bush fan, and we were, my year at Atlantic Acting School was doing, you know, you have to form a company at the end. Mm-hmm. That's like a little, you're tasked with that. You have to create your own work because the industry, of course, was deep into crumbling at that point, is now, of course, dead. but yeah, I like brought that play because it was so rude. I was just like, can I play Chiclet in this play? And it was so fun. That was like such a New York dream. Sometimes I look back at that, I'm like, I can't believe we did that play, like, independently.
I'm glad you're saying that, because, you know, it, to me, it was also like, I just remember, like, before the backstage, I just remember being like, why did I get lucky enough to be, like, put with, like, a group of silly girls that it like, I think if we were to look back and sit in the audience and watch it, I think it would still be really fucking good. That's I
know it was. I think it was really, really good. And let me just fill out the record here. Eric. This is just, I want to do this, this was a unique case. Okay. There wasn't like, we weren't like constantly talking to people in your year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Eric showed up. And just immediately was so preternaturally, I don't know what that word means, funny. It truly, everyone knew, and you truly, you know, you just fit right in with our little group of girls. And that is what, beyond that, that, you know, we loved you obviously at school, but that is also why you had to be in that play, because everyone who was in that had to have some sort of kind of, they didn't just have to be funny. They also had to kind of have that, like, skewed kind of, you know, Charles Bushy kind of campy thing.
I think that part of the campiness and part of the reason why I think you and I connect in a way is there's like, you have to have a bit of a darkness in the past to be able to make fun of the present. And I think that like the Tennessee of it all for you, the Missouri of it all for me, the also like you said, the Atlantic create your work of it all. I think that I didn't fully understand that until the past 5 years when I was like, oh no, you really have to do every single thing yourself to actually carve out a path. And I just remember, if I may go into my first ref of one of the things that you made on your own in this, like, you know, that like first few years out of school, was I remember when you posted Paris with 1K per land. I ran into you at some Pipeline, the theater company event. And I remember saying to you, like, oh my God, this. And of course, again, was a fangirl then, fangirl now. I just remember being like, I need to tell you how good this is. And I remember you saying something that was like, yeah, it's like, I remember you said something about how fun it was to make. And you were like, yeah. And I wonder why you said this in the least monstrous way. I want to make that very clear. But you were like, there's not a lot of people watching it. There's like not it, you like weren't getting as much attention on it or views on it. And I remember being like, that's insane. And of course, that's not like every time your name comes up, people who have been there from the jump are like, Paris.
It is, I have to say, it is the video that started it all. But yeah, it was it's funny, it's just never enough, you know. But I think I was responding to like the kind of comedy landscape at that time and feeling like, why do people think that's funny? And just like loving, you know, what me and Kate were doing, obviously, and maybe being a little pumped. But that is like to this day our most popular video.
I mean, literally have friends who we to this day, every time I've seen you, I've told you this, but to this day, we will quote, takes more time. Sorry, it's I actually wrote it down. If you walk 5 feet in America, those 5 feet, you could have walked, it's 7 times the amount in Paris. So when you step 4 feet, like a New York block in Paris, spends more time there.
Wow. It really, she's a genius. And, you know, she's no longer with us, of course.
Yeah. But I'm so sorry, by the way.
It's been hard, but also in a weird way, good.
Right. I mean, at a certain point, you had to kind of get the hook in.
Yeah, the vaudeville hook.
Yeah. Well, John, there is obviously more on the record of the meeting notes for today, but the first official podcast question is going to be asked to you right now. John, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I thought a little bit about this. I'm going to kind of, I have a few things if you don't mind.
I don't, John.
Okay, great. The first thing that came to mind was my, like, being behind my mom as she did the Jane Fonda workout on VHS. And like, and just being like, something's going on here. There's also just like Sherry O'Terry.
Huge.
You know, that was a big, excuse me, first, something's going on with the stomach, obviously, since I'm depriving it.
The prolapse tea, whatever the fuck it's called.
Prolon. Sherry O'Terry. Yeah, Sherry O'Terry, just, I remember, like, the kitchen TV. Did you have a kitchen TV?
You know what's funny is,
they were, like, this big.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't think we were lucky enough to have the kitchen television, but we did have an old kitchen bar that would face out to the living room TV, and so you could be able, you could kind of perch and exactly kind of get a view.
Right.
But no, Sherry was very much playing.
Yes. Because I didn't really know what SNL was. I mean, I remembered like my parents watch. I remember like the monologue and that the band behind the celebrity, like in my earliest days of like consciousness, it felt like an adult thing and like not allowed to watch. And then I remember one day, like, you know, that was like the kind of Chris Farley early 90s days. And then as I was getting a little bit older, we transition into the Sherry, Molly, Anna, holy trinity. And I just remember seeing a Spartan cheerleader sketch and being, and not really understanding what it was, but just being like, she is hitting some crazy nerve for me. And then there's like, I Love Lucy.
Oh yeah.
Can I probably ask, no one's ever said.
What do you think is, my hunch is that Jane Fonda's workout videos and then the Molly on a Sherry of it all, there is a thread. And I want you, what do you think the thread is between Jane working your mother's buns out and then sweater weather and then, you know, Anna Gasteyer doing NPR? Like, what do you think is the link?
Well, I think I know exactly what it is, which is like Jane Fonda doing the Jane Fonda workout. That's a totally kind of sincere artifact of culture in the early 90s or late 80s, early 90s, maybe. And like, and that's like, there's no irony there, you know, mm-hmm. that's just like, but it is like fundamentally hilarious, mm-hmm. but it doesn't know it is. And then SNL, those three women are parodying things like that in the culture. And I think there probably was an actual through line for me of like, kind of, like absorbing these weird things of culture, like feeling on some level that they're strange, but not quite yet having the permission to laugh at them. And yes. then you see someone like Sherry O'Terry, you know, whatever, kind of make fun of that thing. And then your synapses are like fire. You're like, oh, right. Okay.
I agree. And I also want to say that my family, the SNL connection started with Mike Myers it was this amazing side door, I think, into faggotry for me, because like in a way Mike Myers is a faggot. I mean, like, well, drag,
the coffee talk,
yeah, Linda Richman, rockets. I mean, my family would quote Linda Richman and, you know, discuss all the time. And then you know, famously my bar mitzvah theme was Austin Powers, and so you can kind of see the origin story there.
Beautiful. I love Austin Powers.
They really
don't make it like that.
Anymore. They don't do it like that. And I have to ask you, this has been popping up in my life. To catch up, I moved to LA like 2.5 years ago. And now this circle of friends I have here, it's popped up twice. Have you heard about Will Ferrell's connection to the Equinox gym?
No.
Apparently Will Ferrell is seen working out at Equinox often, and he's kind of like a presence. And the presence I recently came to hear this very morning is that he will run on the treadmill without headphones on, and it's unclear if the music is playing or if he's just raw dogging it.
Like if the music is playing from his device or if it's he's just embracing the public music.
Well, that's the question. I think it was interpreted that it was playing from a phone without headphones, but I can't imagine he would do that. I just love that we can live in a town where multiple people have messaged about seeing Will Ferrell at Equinox. I find that to be beautiful.
And is it gay guys who have messaged?
First was gay guy, second was straight girl.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, imagine how strange it would be to be in the locker room with a celeb.
Well, and especially Will Ferrell. I once changed next to Anderson Cooper, but that was...
Oh my God, yeah, in New York?
In New York, oh my God, I cannot believe. It was actually... Did you ever see around town David Barton Gym?
Yes, of course. There was one in like...
Yes.
Like on Astor Place.
Exactly. So of course it closed down, but that I went to the one that was like in Chelsea that was like known for full on penetration in the steam room. And so of course I got a membership.
Uh-huh.
I remember I couldn't afford it, so I asked for like Hanukkah. I asked for like a few months, and then immediately had some man put his mouth on my dick without me consenting to it. It wasn't like he assaulted me. It was just like I was not touching myself. But then I told the guy I was seeing at the time about it, and was so anxious and losing my mind so much. My body, talk about a cleanse. My body started to pee every 5 minutes because I thought I had an STD. Like the psychosomatic feelings I had from a man's mouth on my dick for 20 seconds. It was dark. But again, you live, you learn.
But also congrats for entering sexual spaces and doing it.
Thank you.
I often wonder. I never did it, Eric.
Really?
I never did it. And of course, it's not too late.
But you're also like, it's well, I don't know if you see like all the Joel Kim Booster is so beautifully honest in all of his press about how he, now that he had people know who he is when he goes to sex parties and people like while he's fucking them, they're like, I loved you in that thing. It like kind of takes them out of it, which I can imagine for you would be, you know, not the
I think I'm already too self-conscious, just like pre shocking fame. Yes. I think because as we know. I envy you. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's like, I usually don't do so many references to other gay comedians, but it's like Tina Fey telling Matt Rogers on Las Culturistas, like, Bowen, you're too famous now, but Matt, you will be famous so that you can't, you know, rag on people on your podcast. But I'll say to you, John, one day I hopefully will be able to half commiserate that I can't go to, bathhouse without people.
I promise I'm not even referencing like notoriety. It's literally more just like a it's more like a spiritual block.
Yes.
It's like kind of also being a funny person and like,
yeah,
in order to engage in like that, I can't like cross my eyes in the steam room. You know what I mean? Like you have to like kind of drop into something a little more like. And like, I can't do that. Like, I'm like, don't worry, I'm fine. Like, I just, it would be so.
Your synapses, you're fully exploding, imploding from having to be like.
Yeah. No. I can't do that.
Well,
I'm going to work on it. I'm going to push myself.
Do you know what's funny though about this conversation is that I, you know, look at you as, and I texted a friend before this. I was like, I'm interviewing John. I don't want it to be like, I'm just like asking him about every video and everything. Like, I want to actually like engage like a human being. But I'm saying this from a genuine place of like, I look at you and what you do that I think we can all actually harness that proves that we're all going to be fucked up and have our own insecurities, like with you in a steam room. What you can do is like, try to be brave and just go out on a limb as whatever you are in a whatever unique thing you are. So I'm going to get into that for you. You somehow knew in your bones that after you graduated from school, you had to just relentlessly be yourself and put things out there. I know that the school we went to said to make your own work, but like I feel like you went to a degree of it that was above and beyond. Did you know instinctively that you would have to consistently post these videos, go out and do like experimental stand-up, do a Showgirls remake with Cola Scola, like all these, like did you know instinctively that that was what it was going to take, or were you following your bliss? Because it's taken me a lot of years to like create a podcast, to create a live show, to boo, 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 boo. And you knew it all from the jump. How did you know to do this?
Well, I mean, I did kind of know it, but it was more like a kind of, there was this thing happening where I felt like I did feel a kind of comedic point of view that really so rarely aligned with like theater training or just like plays. Like, you know, it's like, so if you want to be in theater, which I really did, mm-hmm. I auditioned for like several years for New York theater to absolutely no avail.
You like, told me that you auditioned, I think, for like the workshop of Book of Mormon, I remember, or like,
oh my God, yes.
I remember you telling me that.
Yes, and I sang an India Arie song, and I will always regret that. So stupid, but I wanted to do theater, and like, and yet there was not. I mean, Book of Mormon kind of came close in terms of its sense of humor, but like, and they wanted me. I'm kidding, and I said no. And this is no fault of theater, because I love theater, and there's a million things that I would have done that wouldn't have been quite right. But like, to do one play, to get cast in a play is literally impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do it. It's just one play and it takes 62 months. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so I started to feel this thing while I was in acting school of like this like kind of thing that kept just building of like, I want to do this kind of a character. And I was like, you know, I was very, very passionate about the things that I loved. Mm-hmm. You know, I really loved The Comeback and I really loved Ab Fab. And you know, I'm not breaking any new ground here as a gay man for loving those things, but like I was very passionate about, you know, certain kind of movies, certain kind of TV. Summer Heights High, I feel like, was out during college too. And that was a huge, huge influence. Eastbound and Down, like
the way that you would speak in an Australian accent during Psycho Beach Party, and then I became my friends would be like, "Stop! You're trying to talk like John Early." And I,
oh my god, no! But listen, it was I have obviously a Toni Collette thing, mm-hmm. that started very young, Muriel's Wedding, yada yada. But like, it isn't it weird though that is a kind of go to joke for a lot of people. Like, it ain't just me, obviously.
Well, I think it's become that way. I know you have to see the people that are like remarking on certain queer or non-queer comedians right now that are doing John and Kate, and I'm like, it's like a kind of when I read people saying that, I'm like, listen, I do think it happens, and I do think I at one point was 100% channeling John Early subconsciously, but like, it's when you're a single,
well, I never saw it. Never. And you know, it's, first of all, influence is totally just natural. Yep. And me and Kate were so influenced individually by people and then together by people. You know, it's like I think of Variety Shack. I don't know if you like, it was Chelsea Peretti, Andrew, mm-hmm. Rosen, Shanali Bowmick, Heather Lawless. They're kind of, and Stella and What Hot American Summer. It's like all those people were so influential. Like, I look at the Paris video and I see, like, moment for moment, like, me doing Variety Shack or Stella, you know, like, and they were, like, you know, pretty solidly, you know, before us, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And so it's just, like, it's totally unavoidable and it's totally natural and it's not, it's a very strange thing the way it does. It, like, gets written about, it gets tweeted about. I see it all the time. People come up to me and almost kind of, like, guiltily tell me about it, like, that they've noticed it, you know? And I feel like sometimes in my darkest hours when I'm feeling, like, depressed about my career or something, like, mm-hmm. I will be like, these kids, you know, I'm like, it's that part of it's unavoidable, but I'm like, most of the time I actually don't feel any sort of, it doesn't hurt my feelings. I don't feel like proprietary because I feel like I'm copying other people, you know?
Yeah. I think that's kind of the beauty of being inspired. And, but there is a gray area of when someone's like, oh, are you actually taking? But a lot of the time, it's just like, you can't help but feel, you can't help but put into your own work the things that you love in other people's work. And so, yes, in a way, it is kind of a delicious compliment. But
yeah,
because you did bring up like the dark hours, can we humanize John Early? What is like for me, just to, you know, make it a safe space, I'll say the dark thoughts that came from my not wanting to take up space as a young fagotrini was like, okay, if you fail, the world will end. If your career is not successful enough, you have no value. And the critics are telling me, like, you're bad. What you're doing is bad. That's sort of like when I'm not using my tools, when I don't have my 9 hours of sleep, that can sometimes, okay, where my brain goes. What do you sometimes struggle with in your moments of like, you're not high vibrating at a high level? What are the thoughts that you have to combat?
I have, like, you know, the night thoughts, the night terrors, like everyone, you mm-hmm. know, I wake up at like 4 a.m. for some reason, and then my head's spinning and I'm like, oh no. And I typically feel an insecurity about like self-exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll during the day I'll be like really caffeinated and I'll make these plans and I'll be like, yeah, we're doing it. I'm going to shoot something next week. We're just going to do it, you know, and like, or, you know, well, I just did this special, this comedy special, and like, there's music in it, which has like always been a part of my live shows, you know.
We're talking about Now More Than Ever, correct?
We are, in fact, talking about Now More Than Ever. And that was always like a really sacred, like, live show for me. Mm-hmm. Of just like when I would have the same band since like 2012, you mm-hmm. know, and like it was always supposed to be very kind of like Elvis, like tent revival, like really sweaty and just and mm-hmm. and like a party, you know, and I would sing, and in the privacy of those shows, I never wanted to share that with the public. I always just wanted, like, on, like, I never wanted to record that. Yeah. I always, because it's terrified me, the idea of doing that. I always just want to do that in live shows and then kind of move on and let it just be this thing that I did in front of like 300 people, you know. And then, of course, because I'm following the kind of, this is what you're supposed to do as a comedian. You try to have a special. And I was like, okay. And so executives came to those shows, and then it was like happening. And then I was like, oh no, like I am so scared about this thing, because there's just something inherently vulnerable and embarrassing and really earnest about singing.
Yeah.
And so I got really freaked out about that. And then I was touring for that, whatever. I just bring this up as an example of like, there's a sincerity, I think, I at least can't help but be sincere in all of my work. I know a lot of people don't detect it and think I'm just like a maniac,
yeah,
and who plays narcissists, whatever, but like my experience of my own work is that it's very sincere, and I wish it wasn't sometimes, because I wake up at 4 a.m being like, oh, I feel like it's too revealing. Like that's what freaks me out,
of course. But you, just to validate that too, I think it's like a comedian has a very difficult line of like creating the work that's the like fucked up things about your life or the life, the world around us, but then it does reveal some real shit about your actual experience that it's like in an totally. interview, so wait a minute, tell me about, and then it's like all of a sudden you have to talk about, you know, like the fact that you on this special bring up your parents, you know, 25 times, and you keep putting them on the spotlight. It's like, my stupid fucking parents. And then, of course, you actually, not to go full Meredith Vieira, but you also, I think, right, talked to Adi Bryan about it when you like interviewed her the 92nd Street Y. I was watching that, and like she was saying how people were like interviewing her about Shrill, where they were like, so that's your mom? And it's like, you like just like right, have to now, right, now people expect you to mine the deep things from your life. And like,
yes,
that, so there is like a difficulty of like exposing yourself, but also you have to protect yourself, but no one tells you how. It's fucked up in a way.
And all work is like, all stuff that you make is like, no matter how hard you try to make it like a totally different character or like as like ironic and kind of artificial as possible, it's like you always tell on yourself, you always reveal something, you know. And like that's also kind of secretly what I love about art. It's like shocking sometimes. Yeah. I'm gonna play a coal miner from rural England in the 1600s. I don't even know if they were doing coal then, but you know, like, and then I just want to do something totally different. And then I realize like, oh my god, like I watch it back after like months of feeling so protected by the artifice, and then I'm like, oh no, I'm basically, I've just said it all. Like I've revealed everything. But the other thing is too, is just like the industry that I came up in, as in the one we're like in right now, it's like, it's not just you kind of can't just make your work and let it speak for yourself. There's all this other stuff. There's like social media, and you're always, that's the other thing that I panic about at 4 a.m. is social media. I hate the fact that I have now 12 years worth of photos on Instagram that are just, when I go to sleep at night, I'm not really sleeping because there's images simmering on the stove, like just that are there for everyone to pour through. And I'm not worried about anyone finding anything upsetting or something. I mean, of course we all are. That's the world we live in. But, right. But like, I don't think I have anything upsetting. It's more just like this kind of constant exposure. Like, I don't like that anyone at any time can go to my Twitter, my Instagram, and just see these things I've voluntarily given to the world for consumption. Yeah. It's like, it's a really weird bind we're all in. And I think it's affecting all of our like mental health in such a crazy way. I don't know.
I agree. Well, it's also, I think, like when you are a creator and the pressure to like, okay, consistency is key. Keep on putting shit out. And then I'm sure, I don't know if you've been told this, but like, I'm sure, you know, well, we want to help the project by, you know, maybe you could do a bunch of posting about, and then you have to like come up with like an engaging way to start in the first 3 seconds of the video for people to not swipe away. It's like not, it is not great. It is not great.
It's sad that there are no kind of institutions anymore. Like what I found when I went on tour recently, I was like, oh, so it's all up to me. Like I was like, so the venues, the agency, the live part of the agency, and this is not their fault. It's literally that it is now all on the performer and their personal platforms. Like they don't just like print out flyers anymore. You know, they don't do radio content. I mean, they do, but like it doesn't move the needle. It's all up to you, and that sucks.
Yeah, because you want to be able to spend your time on the actual show itself.
Yes. Instead of like desperately posting, it's hell.
Well, I hope that something that did help your mental health was knowing that your love of Toni Collette, it finally reached a fever pitch where she did get to react on live television to your impression of her in The Sixth Sense on Daddy Seth Meyers' show. Can we just talk about how perfect Seth Meyers is?
I know, he's an angel.
If he was gay, do you think you would be married for decades to him?
I think it's very possible.
Where would you live?
Montauk or something? Yeah. I mean, I feel like all those late night hosts have like houses in the Hamptons.
And would you do the cooking or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I would just fully surrender and become like a little.
You look great in white and denim. But it's when
Nancy Myers.
Hello. When Toni Collette reacted to, wait, what is the line that you did from The Sixth Sense that you did as your impression?
I asked her, do I make proud?
And then she said, he is so funny. What was it like for you? Well, she actually said, what is that? When you first started speaking, and then she said, he is so funny, and she clearly was game.com and loved you.
Well, I'm so happy you interpreted that way, because I of course couldn't help but like, they asked for my permission to do that, and I was like, of course, like so excited. But I was also like, I, you know, there's a fine line with like gay obsession and fandom where like I really understand if like I just don't want her to be uncomfortable, you know, because it could like, I'm doing an impression, obviously, but it's like that's one of my favorite performances of hers. Of like, course. It's a just totally genius performance, and like I don't want her to think I'm making fun of her in any way. And I understand too. Sometimes actresses, I feel like, understandably, with like gay worship, are a little like, okay, like what's going on? You know,
what do you think? Like, I mean, remember Kate Blanchett had that press junket where they were talking, they asked her about the gaze of something, of the character's gaze, and Kate Blanchett was like, oh yeah, I thought you meant the gaze, and she did a limp wrist. To me,
I love that.
To me, yeah, to me, she was like in on it. I think she is like, yeah. But were you worried that Toni was like,
but if she wasn't in on it, mate, we deserve to be taken down a notch.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Please do the gesture. Yeah, but what were you asking?
Were you worried that Toni was kind of like not sure what the vein of the impression was coming from?
I was worried, and I was worried that she was like put on the spot to react to that, and like, you know, I don't know, but I think she knows, because I've had the opportunity to have like a very long form conversation with her on a podcast, mm-hmm. and I think it was all cleared up there. I think she knows like that the fandom and my history with her is like, comes from a place of like pure love.
Well, listen, you know? I have to say, like, you to Toni Collette is me to Whoopi Goldberg. And I can only imagine the emotions that would swirl around any real life interaction with her. And you would not be a human being if you were not like analyzing what her response was to your literal impression on a national yes. network televised program. So yeah. let's humanize that. The other,
thank you.
Well, because now we're talking about the women and the impersonation, you on Conan, 2016 was the year of our Lord, where you sang Lucky by Britney Spears. And you said, quote, what a sad song that came true for her. Question A is, you said on the interview that the way you like to do the impression is people, because you know at the time rigged, the elections being rigged I think was a big thing, so you don't want to make you want to make sure it wasn't rigged, show the audience it wasn't rigged, so you asked them to shout out suggestions. You said you don't do toxic because it's too fast, you can't get the nuance of the impression, and then someone said Lucky and you sang Lucky. Had you chosen before the camera red lit recording button?
Literally no. And Eric, I have to be real with you, I don't remember taking requests.
You blacked
on Conan.
Out. Oh.
I blacked out.
Yeah, no, you blacked
out. I actually can't believe I did that.
You did. You know, and that, I just remember, this was, again, 2016. I graduated college 2012. So think, like, I'm 4 years out. I'm, like, hustling my ass. Clearly, like I had done one, you know, I went on tour with a musical. I was, like, but then I was, like, devastatingly, like, out of a job. What the fuck am I doing? I see you on Conan. I'm, like, oh. And then you take suggestions from the crowd. You do a live Britney impersonation. And then I'm just thinking, like, he's unlocked something. And I was like, so again, equally inspired and also like terrified by like thinking that there, it takes a certain amount of bravery. And I had not worked through enough of my own stuff to have that bravery. But yes. The way that you did Britney's guttural croak, mm-hmm. I unfortunately talk about taking the John Early-isms. I will still find myself singing a Britney song and going into
good. Well, I mean, it's because it's real. It's not real. I mean, I'm just doing her.
Has Britney ever come to know that John Early has done an impersonation of her?
I mean, if she has, there would I wondered with when I did Colbert, I did like her Christmas song with the their band, and there was a lot of like that was picked up in a lot of like music publications, and I was like, maybe she'll see this. But now, and then, of course, I sang Overprotected in my special. Mm-hmm. And then I say, of course, loosely, I don't want to assume. But I there's no way that got to her. I don't know. She has such a strange life.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think like if she's seeing any comedians, it's like Kevin Hart. It's not me.
Wow. No, that is there is a separation, I think, of Britney from sort of the world, but especially the queer world. I can't. I wouldn't assume that she's got like a fag in like her kitchen being like, did you see John Early?
No, there's no way.
Maybe.
It'd be so cool if there was. Now listen, I know that like I think I heard that Charlie XCX is producing her next album.
Well then there's hope.
So there might be hope. Okay, I actually have to get on this.
Yeah,
there might actually be hope.
And then you have to make a social media video about it, and then
let me write that down.
Yeah, write that down. No, scream to your assistant.
Get to Charlie. I mean, that was always I assumed when I made that special that like I was like, Missy's gonna see the Oops, Oh My cover, like Tweet's gonna see that, like Timbaland's gonna see that, Neil Young's gonna see After the Gold Rush, Donna Summer's Estate is gonna see, you know. And like no one cared. It literally was like when a cover falls in the woods, it just no one cared.
If a gay guy covers a diva song on Max.
I was preparing for Missy to post. I was like so boldly during the edit of it, I was telling the directors, I was like, she'll probably post. Yeah. Like she tends.
But John, you have to. Like you have to. There are certain delusions that you have to say in post.
To get through. Yeah.
Especially in post. Well, since we have the very easy segue into the next podcast question, I'm gonna go for it, John Early. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
This is really hard because it's just one.
Uno. Uno Caractriso.
So they have to be alive. I know that they don't have to be, but like...
And I want you to hear this. I say this when I find people in crisis like you. It's how you feel today.
Yeah.
It's how you feel today.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking around at posters. I mean, it probably just would be Lisa Kudrow. Because I owe it all to her. I mean, I don't think she is truly she's the one. I mean, she's the one that I'm actively trying not to copy her, I copy her more. She is so in my DNA. But like, you know, I think I would save her. I especially because I feel like there is so much more for her to do too, you know?
Well, that's, I think, if we're, you know, you're going to put on your list, talk to Charlie, and then you're also going to put on your list, like...
Oscar.
Oscar for Lisa Kudrow, but yeah. John Early plays her. What do you play in Lisa Kudrow's Oscar?
I can't, because I'll just be doing her, and then she'll be like, get out.
But you're doing Valerie Cherish.
Exactly. This literally kind of happened to me when I auditioned for the second season of The Comeback.
Stop.
Which was the scariest experience of my entire life. And not for her, I just went on tape. But like, Jessica Fry put me on tape.
Hey girl.
And I was so scared because I just cared too much about that show, and I was like, and I literally was like, I like watched the tape and I was truly like, you can't, you gotta make sure that you don't literally do her. and then I watched the tape and I was like, and I'm doing it. I'm doing it, it's probably absolutely imperceptible to like, you know, the layman, but like, I wonder, you know, for her, I imagine it is perceptible.
You can see when people are doing John Early, right?
Yes, sometimes. I have seen it.
What was the character that you auditioned for?
It was the part that Vanya Asher did. Do you know him?
I don't think
absolutely
I do.
Absolutely stunningly gorgeous actor.
He is gorgeous.
Yes. He played an HBO executive, I think, for like the, where she was doing the kind of prestige HBO show that season.
What would you like to say to Asher right now? I'm kidding. What would you like to say to Vanya?
Fuck you.
Well, I love any sort of backstory, especially with auditions that we didn't book. Is there anything else you've auditioned for that comes up in the memory banks of either you were convinced you got it and you didn't, or you just wanted it so bad that you woke up at 4 a.m. for weeks?
Well, there's one, like the first thing I ever booked was an episode of Law and Order Criminal Intent, and it was my senior year of college.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I was working with a youth agent. like literally her clients were 5 years old. And I was balding.
Sure.
You know, and like it was so funny. Like I would go into her office and like there were 5 year olds in the waiting room and me. Because she was kind of like, yeah, no, I could, you could do like 90210.
Mm-hmm.
You could be like a kind of teenager in 90210. I was like, and you know, I was 22, but like, or 21 or something. But she was like, what do you like? What do you want to be in? And I was like, well, you know. I was like, they just did the Strangers with Candy movie. Like, I was like, that is something that if that were happening now, like, I would love to, you know, she was like, huh. Like, she was so kind of weirded out by my, like, taste, you know?
And she's like, there's no kids in that movie.
and then she sent me out for Law and Order Criminal Intent, in which I played a gay basher. And I got it. I literally had for the audition. They're like one word lines. It was me like chasing a gay guy in the woods and going, "Run, faggot!" Literally, I was like, "Run, fag, go, run!" And then he runs, and then he falls into like a frozen river, and then we're like, "Oh, fuck!" And we like run away.
And of course, he dies. And
I think he dies, and I got it, and I was so excited to have something for my reel where I went, run, faggot. Like, I was like, that can open my reel. Imagine.
Run, faggot.
But I, John Early. But then I literally was like, oh no, this shoots when I'm doing a one-act play at ETW. And I literally, like, the Christianity, like,
jumped
out. And I was like, parents have book tickets. I was like, I cannot, like, we, I mean, and by the way, I know it's maybe seems insane. I do stand by it. I'm like, literally flights were booked to see the, I'm not going to go, sorry, guys, I'm going to do like, it would literally, there were no understudies. Like, I was like, I can't, like, I fucked up. I have to, like, and I was like, I can't do it. And my agent was like, she was like, she was like, you're going to burn so many bridges. Like, this is really bad. Like, you didn't, like, say your conflict. I was like, I didn't know. I didn't know I was supposed to write down my conflicts or tell, no one's ever told me to do that.
No, and no one ever does until you.
And no one gets anything.
Right. Well,
I had auditioned a bunch and not gotten a thing. So I just kind of like, you know, I don't know. I just didn't. I was, and I'm playing a gay bachelor. I didn't think I was going to get that.
So you ended up taking you did the one act play. Your parents flew in, landed at LaGuardia, and you were a human tree. And so, and then Vanya Asher said, run, faggot.
Yes. I know. I should find out who did it, but it would be literally impossible to figure out the episode unless it's deep in my email. But I did the play, and it was like a Strindberg play, and I played a straight man.
Well,
having an affair with a younger woman.
I was going to say, like, I, you know, have been working on some writing stuff. And one of the things I have been remembering is how focused we as young gay actors were on
playing straight. Can you play straight?
Yeah.
And the fact that you played a straight in Strindberg, you did straight Strindberg, and then you got straight Law and Order, like, that must have fed some part of your, like, shame of, like, oh my God, this makes me more of a human because I'm believably not gay.
Yeah, I thankfully was old enough to find it so funny.
Good.
I mean, especially Law and Order thing. I knew in real time that that was like the funniest thing that's ever happened. And like, I was genuinely so excited to do it.
Well,
to like have the footage.
It's so funny you say this because I obviously we have to end in a minute, but like I could have another hour of talking about like you clearly knowing that was that funny at the time, again, compared to Spare. But I think I would have been like, no, this is Law and Order. I will call anyone a faggot for the credit. Like, but you had an awareness of like that's camp and you. What age did you? Was the shame down and the camp awareness was up? Like, can you diagnose yourself?
Sorry, I'm literally seeing a hummingbird. Hummingbird break. It's not there. It's just the fasting. I'm like, there's a hummingbird.
It's like it's cartoon.
I don't know. I have plenty of shame. I have tons of shame left over. But I mean, I was really lucky to have very accepting parents and go to a school where I was like very, very clearly like accepted. I mean, I dealt with my fair share of bullying when I was much younger, but like in the pivotal moments, like, you know, but of course there's plenty of like cultural like shame that you absorb without even realizing it, and that's absolutely there. I guess high school when I started to watch things like that were subversive, like Strangers with Candy, it's like AbFab, all the things I love, like these are like really, these are things that like are making fun of mainstream culture and of like kind of conservative strains in our society and like the kind of moralism in American media, and you know, it's that was so revolutionary for me, like totally. That was like that totally changed my life and gave me a kind of critical distance where I could like make fun of things,
yeah,
and, you know, and it helped me so I guess high school.
Yeah, that's no, it is very fortunate to be able to have like perspective, I think, of like
yeah
where your value lies and what you can make fun of. Before we get into the final excitement of this insanely gorgeous film that is called Stress Positions, I just need to ask you and give you quick props to the short film that I still, no joke, I sent to a friend 3 weeks ago, which of course is Rachel. The short about the party you're throwing for your boyfriend who's about to go out of town, and then Caperland, of course, is the caricatrice at the party. Are you okay if I ask a question that spoils the ending for anybody listening right now who hasn't? Okay, so if anybody hasn't watched it right now, pause this episode, go like 2 minutes into the future, go watch it, or just go watch it and then come back. But at the end of the film, it's of course, or halfway through, it's of course revealed that Caperland's character was not invited, just came in off the street. And then you see the actual found footage, I might call it, of the time this happened in your real life, where a person came into the party, no one had invited her. Can you explain the feeling in the room and the epilogue of what happened after this person left? Who did you end up finding out who she was? And does she know this film was made?
I have no idea. We never found out who she was. We've never heard from anyone about it. And that is, you know, in a part of what is, I think, ultimately good about that short is like it is that Kate is such a good actress that it's like it's genuinely chilling and like. And she did, I mean, she is saying things verbatim that the girl said about, like, kind of the band that she heard this band playing.
Right.
And, like, so, like, once that was, like, at first it was really funny. Like, at first when we realized that no one knew who she was and that happened in the kitchen, like just like we did in the short. And, like, most of those people in that short were there when it happened. There's only one other person that sadly was not in the short. And then, like, and then we added Gordon, my boyfriend at the time. And, like, but at first it was so hilarious. It just seemed very kind of brazen of this girl. But we also knew like we kind of had to get her out of there. Like it, because it was clear that it wasn't like innocent. Like, cause it wasn't a big enough party for there to be like, just like, yeah, come on, come on. Like it was like a tiny, tiny gathering of friends. But then once my friend Sam, who does it in the video too, the short film, once he confronted her, it became clear that that something was off and something was missing.
She was wrestling something in there.
Yeah. There were some demons in there, y'all. But like, and it was very chilling and not, it was scary. Not like I wasn't worried about my safety. I just was worried about like, we have someone who is potentially maybe like, I don't know. There's some dark stuff going on and like we're like all kind of drunk and like certainly not equipped to deal with that. And you know, and she, part of why she snuck in, which is like what's again interesting about the short, is like she was able to kind of sneak in because she kind of seemed like a just kind of average millennial girl who works in PR.
Right.
You know, like she just, there was on a kind of class level, she was fully in our little bougie milieu, you know, like it wasn't, you know, it was, and that was what was kind of, I think, chilling too about our own kind of assumptions of like who can come in and out of this party.
Yeah. And the way she leaves at the end of it, the way the end of the film where she just like, you scream when you open up the shower curtain thinking that she's going to maybe be there. And then she just disappears.
And that was, of course, our own.
Yeah.
We added that. Okay. That did not happen. She did leave. And when she left in real life, we were like, we could not stop talking about it for just hours. The entire night obviously became about it. The next week became about it. We were like, we were laughing so hard and we were so shaken by the whole thing.
Adrenaline is rushing through your bones.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
It was heaven. It was a really kind of like, it was a very, despite its chilling, like, you know, undertones, it was like such a funny thing to go through with your friends. It was crazy.
Well, it's a singular short, and Kate, shout out, because
so beautiful,
beautifully done. The other beautifully done film is Theta's film Stress Positions, that you not only star in, executive produced. So it was like, what, like killed it at Sundance. Now it's like, by the way, I read this amazing review. It says, in real life, anyone would hate to spend even a few minutes in their company, the characters in the movie, yet in Hamill's hands, they become easy to enjoy and laugh at while completely understanding their full awful personalities. Can I just say mazel on the fact that you've worked with Theta for so many years and now it's like, to get this thing made, it's kind of a big fucking deal.
It is a big deal. It's kind of, I do have to remind myself every once in a while, like, we've been working on this movie for so long that I forget just my initial kind of shock when it got greenlit.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it's like Theta I met at Atlantic. You know, she was in the summer intensive when I was working the front desk.
Mm.
And we worked up with Anya on shows after college, and, like, you know, she one of the great teachers at Atlantic, and she and I just became very, very close friends. She was my kind of DJ sidekick at this variety show I hosted for like 5 years at Ars Nova, and it's nuts. And she opens for me all the time. She's a brilliant songwriter too, and she's also, since as long as I've known her, she's like a real cinephile. And she's also just a genius, like, thinker, talker. Like, she has a brilliant podcast called Nymphowars. I'm sorry to just plug every Theta project. Please. But she's, I don't know. She's just a, I've spent so many years, like, of my life, like, trying to get people to, like, look at Theta. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with this, like, crazy genius. Like, I think I'm friends with, like, the next Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm like, hello. Like, and it was the coolest feeling in the world to bring a, like, completed script by her. And it's a very beautiful document. Like, it's like a play.
Yeah.
And there are scenes in it that really feel theatrical. And it has a kind of intelligence and dense dialogue in a way that they kind of don't do anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And there are plenty of reasons why this thematically, you know, why any kind of company would go, like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just really understood that they had a special script, and they really understood that Theta is, like, I think Theta is going to be like a New York legend.
Yes.
Like, if she keeps making movies, you know, like, she's just, and she should be this, like, public intellectual. She should be on talk shows talking just freely, you know. Anyway, but it's so cool. It is crazy to think of us drunk at Showgasm,
yeah,
on stage together, and then now for to be, like, being paid. I mean, not being paid, I would argue, but like, but, you know, being flown to New York to promote our film,
yeah, with events, you know, that Cola Scola is also moderating, being a part of.
Exactly.
And if I may full circle, Showgasm is where I first saw you speak about Toni Collette and show the fan site that you did have.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You and Theta, it's very cool to see the journey, and I just want to tell you one more time how much I look up to your, not only, of course, the talent and your kindness and boo, 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 but the, I know earnestness is, you know, can be schlocky on a gay ass podcast, but, like, you are a very brave girl, and I aspire to put out things without the shame like you have done, and to champion people like Theta, and for you to work with someone like Kate. And, like, this movie is such a great celebration, I think, of, like, putting your authenticity and, like, and being brave into a film that maybe not everybody is gonna get, but it's gonna hit every person that watches it. And I just want to say, like, I look up to you in many ways, and this is just a dream to have you on this podcast, and I so appreciate you taking the time to do it.
Eric, unfortunately, my sound cut out for the last minute. I'm kidding. So I didn't get any of that, but you're adult. No, I'm kidding. I'm saying that because it's literally too hard for me to receive. It's the kindest thing ever. And you are one of the funniest in the game, and just such a goddamn natural. Seriously.
John.
You always have been. You always have been.
Kid. Well, I'm gonna explode and live with that compliment for the rest of the year, and that's gonna get me through a lot of weeks. John, thank you for coming on. Tell the girls follow you if you want them to, and where Stress Positions is playing.
Don't follow me. I only follow me to get information about stress positions at the John Say on Twitter and Instagram. The stress positions is opening at IFC April 19th in New York. It is opening April 26th in LA at, I believe, the Landmark Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be some other public screenings in LA too. And then on May 3rd, I think it's going to go to other like smaller like art house movie theaters in the country.
Well, I will link in the description the stress positions, where it's playing, the site, and obviously all of John's stuff. And John, I'll see you at the bathhouse.
The store.
I'll see you at the store, mama.
Milk, eggs. Okay, I'll see you there. And thank you, Eric.
You're a dream.
Thank you for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode with John Early, leave a 5-star review and say what you like about the pod to spread the gay ass gospel. If you would like to see more gay ass podcasts in person, come to That's a Gay Ass Live Show May 9th in Netflix is a Joke Festival, and you can get bonus episodes including the Gay Ass Sex Diaries at the Patreon at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. I love you so much. Thank you for being here and being queer, and I'll see you next year. Week. I'll see you next week.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.